You and I back together again for a busy show Tuesday, April 19th, 2022 on Connecticut Today. I reason that it's probably a good time to really stop screaming at each other about COVID-19 masking. University of New Haven Professor Charles Morgan joined the show to talk about the possible mental state and what's going on with Russian President Vladimir Putin. Heritage Foundation Senior Policy Analyst Preston Brasher stopped by to share his thoughts on the state and fairness of the American tax system. All right, and we get to our Facebook question of the day, which leads into a story you just heard at the top of the hour newscast, and I was just kind of contemplating that with the question. And of course, everybody today is still, you know, agog, and a lot of people are upset and mad with this Trump-appointed federal judge yesterday in Florida. Regarding the judge saying, hey, you know, the CDC didn't go through proper channels, so the last 2 or 3 weeks of this mask mandate that I guess was going to end, what, on May 3rd anyway? I mean, again, it's not like we're talking about something that was going to go another 3-4 months. Now, I guess I get it. The scientists were saying, listen, we're still kind of studying this son of Omicron variant or daughter of Omicron variant. I don't know. Is there a correct gender for the coronavirus? Does the coronavirus have preferred pronouns? I don't know. But this BA2 variant, which is a variant of the Omicron variant, which was a variant of the original COVID-19 situation. So the feds wanted to keep the mask mandate on public transportation going for another 2 weeks or so. The judge said no. Now, obviously, it was a right-leaning judge appointed by President Trump. Still no word as to whether the White House will appeal it. And then, of course, you would pick a left-leaning judge because that's how the pendulum goes, left, right, left, right. But I'm listening to this top story, and I'm reading a lot of stuff on social media and on Facebook and all that, and, man, people are just losing their minds. And again, social media lends to that. I get it. It gives people soapboxes that shouldn't have soapboxes, gives people a platform who actually think that people care what they say. But, you read this today and, oh, my God, I guess a right wing judge wants to kill people. Kill people. Don't you think that's a little strange? You know, at a time where, yeah, there is a spike happening. But again, if you listen to the science here, and yes, some scientists are mad the mask mandate is gone, at least for now. But it's turning out to be exactly what everybody thought it would be. More variants, more transmissible variants, but less lethality, I guess. Less lethal, if that's a word. But, man, you see people whose heads are exploding here. There it is. This is going to cause massive deaths. Well, how do you know? You have no idea. You have absolutely no idea. And here's an idea. I have one. And this is not necessarily that learned of a point, but I'm going to make it anyway. I have one idea. If you want to wear a mask on a plane, wear a mask. Now you have the option. If you want to wear a mask on a plane, wear a mask. It's pretty simple. If you don't want to wear a mask on a plane, don't wear it. If the number of infections and or deaths and or mortality levels skyrockets, guess what? The feds are going to say, no, we got to put the mask back on, and here's the reason why. And then they'll battle it out on the courts again. But again, we're starting to, this is what was going to be the fear of this whole thing with the masking and the lockdowns and everything. That, yes, there's a segment of society that understands what this is. This is a medical protocol. This is a way to try and control something, again, that we haven't dealt with in 100 years. So I get that. But the danger I'm seeing now here, and I thought this might not happen. I thought we were, around this. We beat this around the edge, but I guess we didn't. Is that the masking, the other precautions, while maybe medically sound, have turned into some sort of religion for some people, some sort of religious sacrament, for some people. That's really dangerous. You know, it really honestly is. The fact that, you know, people will now take advantage of an option not to wear a mask because a judge thought in her mind that the proper procedures weren't followed. It's not a judgment as to whether or not that judge or anybody else wants to kill people, although some people say it is. But here's an idea. If you're still that paranoid about this, and if you're still that scared, then wear a mask. Wear a mask wherever you go. Double, triple mask if you want. And again, I've never been against masking. I really haven't. People have compromised immune systems. Some people want to be safe. They don't want to infect people. Some people don't want to get infected. You know, I get all that. I understand that. But now we are 2 years in March, April, May. So we're 26 months into this whole thing. Maybe a month or so on either way, depending upon where you start counting. And yeah, the human condition is, whether you like to admit it or not, the human condition in this is frazzled. It is. There is a, to a lot of people, and to other people, no. But to a lot of people, there's a frazzling, is that a word, of their emotions on this. And, you know, they say, listen, the numbers are down. Every expert says we're going to have to live with this. So enough. And yet there are some people on the other side that have almost, I think, and I'm not an expert in the psychology of this whole thing, but it seems that these 2 years plus, even with, you know, sound medical advice, it's almost like the masking and the COVID cards and everything. I think it really affected people on both sides, and to other people who are saying, hey, you know, because you don't want to wear a mask, you know, you're attacking me. And that's where we really have to be careful about this. You know, you don't want that mask or the lack thereof to be a judgment on somebody's character. Listen, as the doctors have said since the beginning of this whole thing, take a breath, relax, do your due diligence, mask up if you want to, wash your hands, you know, get your shots. We've heard this now for 2 years plus. And everybody here just needs to take a breath, relax, listen to the experts, and if you have leeway to make your own decision, make your own decision. You want to wear a mask? Go ahead. We're 1, 2, 3. We're 5 of them. You don't want to wear a mask? Don't wear a mask. All right. What do you think? 203-333-9422. 333-WICC. And to that end, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, on this Tuesday, April the 19th, I ask you this. Will you wear a mask on passenger flights now that a federal judge has blocked CDC COVID-19 mask mandates for airlines? So would you still be one of those folks? And I don't care if you want to do that, fine. If you were sitting next to me, wouldn't bother me in the least bit. But if you are getting on a plane right now, today, tonight, tomorrow, coming up next week, and the administration has not appealed this, and you're at, you know, you're at Tweed in New Haven, you're at Westchester, you're at JFK, LaGuardia, Bradley, TF Green in Providence, Logan in Boston. Will you wear a mask on passenger flights now that a federal judge has blocked the mask mandates or not? We also strive to continue to bring you local experts to get deeper into what's going on in Ukraine. There's a fear now that the fighting has already ramped up in the eastern part of the country. And everybody continues to wonder, what is Vladimir Putin thinking? Is he completely sane? Is he sly as a fox? Is he completely nuts? Has he lost it? Something in the middle? Well, we can chat about this with our next guest, Charles Morgan. He's a professor of national security at the University of New Haven. He's an author of 100 peer-reviewed publications on several topics like post-traumatic stress, eyewitness memory, interrogation stress, and the like. He's been giving interviews on what is going on in the mind of Vladimir Putin. Does anybody know? Hey, Charles, it's Paul here at WICC. How are you today?
I'm well. It's nice to hear your voice.
Well, thank you, and thanks for joining us. We appreciate it. Well, let's go right for the $64,000 question. You and other experts in your field, Charles, you look at Vladimir Putin, at least what he's doing in this invasion of Ukraine. I don't know if you can gauge him personally. He's not a real outgoing guy. What do you see there? If you're looking at a leader leading an invasion here, are you seeing norms? Are you seeing stuff that doesn't make sense? Give me a basic assessment here.
Yeah, I think when we look at his behavior, given what he said before, we're seeing behavior that's completely consistent with what he's announced for years in building the greater Russian empire. He's been dismissive of Ukrainian sovereignty. He said their leadership is illegitimate. And he thinks in those black and white terms of the way he sees Russia is the right way. Any other view of it is the wrong way. So in technical terms, you know, we often talk people who have a Machiavellian sort of personality style or a narcissistic one. I think it's easier just to say he's dominant, he's ruthless, he will do anything he can to get what he wants. Like we saw the other day, you know, he fired 150 intelligence guys from the FSB because it's not going quite as well as planned. And I can only imagine, you know, after the sinking of their great ship, how many other people are going to get punished because those risk making him look bad. Rather than really regrouping and saying, guys, our plan's wrong, how do we get more? He's getting rid of people who I think have any alternate view to what he wants. I think in the long run, his strategy is quite logical. I think that he knows we won't invade, and that we have limitations on what we can do. And I think he believes he can hold out against the economic sanctions. But he's got the church on his side there, and I think he's trying to rally people around the idea that the hardship they'll begin to feel at home is because of the evil West, that we're the bad people who are creating their hardships. So he's been able to make a bubble and control lots of the messaging, I think, to try and keep as many people on his side as possible at home. And so far, there may be some cracks showing, but I think he still has a large level of support from people at home.
All right, Charles, that's fascinating. I want to get deeper into that after the break. Hang on, Charles Morgan, a professor of national security at the Henry C. Lee College of Criminal Justice and Forensic Sciences at the University of New Haven. Charles, hang on. We'll be right back with you after we do some business, traffic, and weather together right here on WICC. Professor at the University of New Haven, Charles Morgan, joining us, forensic science guy, author of over 100 peer-reviewed publications, as we delve into what is going on, if anybody can even figure that, in the mind of Russian leader Vladimir Putin as this invasion of Ukraine rages on. You know, Professor Morgan, we've heard this about Putin. I've seen him in one-on-one interviews where he's very adamant, saying, essentially, I'm kind of paraphrasing, he hasn't said it like this, but, you know, he has said he wants the old Soviet Union back. He thinks Russia has gotten screwed ever since Yalta, post-World War II. But you know, most people would say that's not going to happen. So, you know, is he, and I know there is a resistance to make, you know, diagnoses here, but is he exhibiting traits of, you know, you're right, he's a very smart guy, but is he a sociopath? Does he only see the world as rules set up to limit him or to do what he wants?
Well, that's a good way of putting it. I mean, I think certainly when we think of sociopathy, we think of people typically who say to themselves, look, the rules don't really apply to me. I get to do what I want. Another way of thinking about it as well is we say that they believe that they get what they want by manipulating, by selectively using the rules and conning other people. He certainly has exhibited those features in the past where he can be charming and sweet talk people and then turn around and do something completely different. You know, he poisons his adversaries politically. So he definitely is a person who has gotten away with so many things in the past of getting what he wants, that it's possible that he truly believes that, you know, he's that special and unstoppable. Who knows what's really in his mind? But, you know, we have to admit most of what he's done has turned out okay for him in the past, whether it was, you know, taking over in the Donbass region or what he was doing in Chechnya. So you could say he may have created enough of a world bubble around him that he believes, you know, sincerely what he's saying. I'm probably a little more skeptical, and I think that he's manipulative, and that he knows that he can push this as far as he can, and he knows what our limitations are. I mean, most people who are in this Machiavellian sociopathic lane, they really only respond to a bigger power than they have, right? Yeah. And if they don't see a limitation, they'll just push it. They'll keep going. So I think we're in to see more atrocities. There's not going to be remorse on his part for the horrible things we're going to find on civilians getting killed, you know, in the Ukraine. I don't think he cares. I think he sees that all as irrelevant. We might say he's a very cold-hearted person, and I think that would be, in my view, pretty correct. I think he's willing to do anything it takes. So my own view is it's unlikely that he's going to stop until he feels he has secured enough of that region of the Ukraine where he can maintain those natural resources. I think the big game is this. He wants the biggest piece of a shrinking pie in a world where we're going to start fighting over energy and resources.
Yeah.
We see Russia doing this in the north, in the north pole region, whereas the ice is melting. He's got icebreakers up there, and they're claiming territory far beyond what is normally assigned to each country. So I think this is part of his bigger game plan of expand what you can, get away with as much as you can, and then see if they'll try and take it back. And he knows right now we can't take anything back. But I think he's aware that we're having an impact, because he was making those threats the other day about don't give any more weapons to the Ukrainians, which is a nice sign for us. We're saying, it might be some of those new weapons that really sunk that battleship. You know, who knows?
Yeah.
But when he starts issuing warnings and firing people, I think we're seeing cracks, right? We're seeing some anxiety and some anger and fear, and that it's not going as well as he planned. But I think it'll have to be an internal pressure that finally either brings him down or makes him stop.
I, Professor, see just this odd juxtaposition when, as he wraps some of this in religion, and he appears with, you know, Russian Christian or Catholic religious officials, and I, to me, that is just amazing. You know, that is kind of something Hitler did as well. And I wonder if these, you know, Russian officials are sitting there going, "Well, I better play with the game here, play along, or I'm going to end up dead." But that is just an amazing thing.
Exactly. You look around and you see the people who oppose him vanish, right? But I'm sure that he's sending money into the church coffers, and he knows the church is going to be a key player to have the hearts and minds of the locals who don't really know everything that's going on, because their access to information is more limited. But the church leaders, some probably believe in him and his vision, and others, if they're skeptical, have probably thought they better shut up and not say anything. People who do have that magical way of disappearing, you know.
I mean, and this is the old, you know, Soviet Union, where you became a non-person. You know, final subject, Professor Morgan. I have a media friend who we were chatting the other day online, and this media friend of mine knows people in Russia through some media contacts she has had, and she said, you know, I'm amazed, because at least the people, she said, that I know, who are very bright people, you know, media people over there, they actually, and this shocked her, they actually are buying the line of Ukraine being a hotbed of Nazism. She said that there are people buying that line in Russia.
Yeah. You know, it's funny, because sort of propaganda messaging sometimes has a kernel of truth to it, right, that helps it sell. And, you know, historically, even the Gestapo didn't have to do a whole lot of work. There was so much anti-Semitism going on in the Ukraine way back then, right, that he can appeal to something. It's not a true historical representation of the way things are. But the fact that people buy what the government says is scary to us, but it's not surprising. Like, we saw it happen here in the United States. Remember, after 9/11, Lots of people, a couple of years in, were convinced that somehow Saddam Hussein was also involved in 9/11, right? And it, we're like, no, those are the Iraqis. The other ones, the other folks are different. But people tend to believe, like George Orwell said, they believe what they hear over mm-hmm. and over again, and what they hear from people that they rely on in some way. So even if people say, well, you can't trust the government all the time, if they know they're dependent on that government to have access and power and privilege, it does shape the way that they think, and they're more likely to at least go along with it. It's hard to say without seeing people privately, you know, how deeply they believe it. But I certainly know, you know, stateside, people that unfortunately watch too much of certain channels versus others and don't get a broad enough view,
yeah,
just believe heart and soul what, you know, what they hear on their favorite TV station or something. Sure. You know, I tell my students that all the time. I just say the best way that we can, because none of us is immune. Mm-hmm. We have to make sure we're listening to multiple voices, even the ones we don't like.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
If you love George Orwell, you're seeing it in action.
Yes,
you know?
Absolutely. I read a piece about that the other day. Professor, this has been fascinating. Thank you so much. Professor Charles Morgan III, Professor of National Security at the Henry C. Lee College of Criminal Justice at UNH. Professor, thank you, and hopefully we can chat down the road. Take care.
Oh, please do. I love it. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Professor. Good stuff there. Thank you. Professor Charles A. Morgan III. Well, in this April 19th situation that we're in right now, that is tax day plus one. Of course, tax day was yesterday, April the 18th. We talked about it at length here on the program. Hopefully you got your taxes done early. Hopefully you're getting something back. I think I read where the average refund is about $3,200. This year, but I hope you did something. Don't do nothing when you pay your taxes. Do something. Pay them. File an extension. Have your tax professional do something. You don't want the feds coming at you. Let's talk a little tax policy right now. Preston Brashers is the guest from the Heritage Foundation. He's the senior policy analyst for tax policy at the Herman Center. Hey, Preston, it's Paul here on WICC. How are you?
I'm great. It's good to be with you, Paul.
Does analyzing tax policy give you migraines or give you headaches? Is there any joy in that, Preston, at all? Or is it kind of like a crime scene, like somebody's got to do it?
I guess it's a little bit of a love-hate relationship when you're looking at taxes, because it can drive you crazy if you don't have a little bit of a sense of humor about it sometimes.
I guess. You know, Preston, I think I saw the headline regarding last year's tax returns heading into this year. Every year, Preston, don't we see that headline that says something like IRS collects record revenues? And yet we still have people, for whatever reason, mainly politics, Preston, saying, yeah, but that's not good enough. We need more. How would you categorize, Preston, having looked at this? How would you categorize the state of the taxation of America?
Yeah, well, I think the big picture is it's not that we don't tax enough. We clearly do tax enough. The numbers that you came out that you're citing, they show that we're actually, by historical standards, we're taxing more than we have in the past 20 years or so. It's above historical averages. And yet we're still racking up huge amounts of deficits each year. So it's not a matter of us not taxing enough. Clearly, we're just spending entirely too much. And unfortunately, if we continue on this path, we're going to be taxed even more in the near future, and certainly in the distant future, as those deficits just continue to rack up.
And you know, Preston, there's this common misconception, I think, because I've been doing these shows for years, and I know you've been studying this for a while. There's this common misconception that Republicans are always better on taxes and Democrats are always worse. And, you know, Preston, when I see administrations change, you know, a lot of times you'll see a 1% or a couple of percent shift in this bracket or that bracket. You see some giveaways. Hey, if we raise this, we'll give you this write off. So we always have this kind of pendulous relationship with taxes in this country, don't we? Like, it's back and forth, little here, little there, but Americans do still pay a lot, really, no matter who's in office.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think, you can look at how things have changed over the last 40 years or so, and I think there have been some some small gains in terms of improvements here and there, and there have been some sometimes where it's gone back in the other direction. I think the 2017 tax reform was by and large a good thing for most Americans, but there were parts of it that weren't perfect either. So these things are, we haven't seen a fundamental change to how taxes work really since the early 80s that fundamentally improves things. And I'd like to see that in my lifetime, hopefully, that we do kind of make this tax code make sense, because right now the tax code is absolutely atrocious. It's if you look at all the, the tax law itself is 7,000 pages. The tax regulations are, are another 14,000 pages. And then you add on all the other rulings and case law and different things that people have to look at. It's just endless. And so this is, no one would design a tax code that looks like this. So I think it's a big deadweight loss and a big, albatross around the necks of the American people and the American economy that we have to deal with this very complicated, convoluted tax code.
All right, Preston, I want to take a quick break here. We'll be back with you. I want to go into some maybe alternatives that people say, well, we should try this or try that, or let's experiment with this and see what happens. Be right back with Preston Brashears, Senior Policy Analyst of Tax Policy at the Herman Center for the Heritage Foundation. Back with Preston straight ahead. First, traffic and weather together right here on WICC. We talk taxes here. A few more minutes with Preston Brashears, Senior Policy Analyst about taxes at the Heritage Foundation. Preston, over the years, I've been doing these kinds of shows for decades, and I've had numerous guests on, and there's always these suggestions of different types of taxation to get the revenue we need. A national sales tax, a consumption tax, a VAT tax, a flat tax. You could do it on an index card. Look, we've never really seen those. Why do you think there is such a pushback to even trying something maybe in an isolated area in a lab setting to see how these work? We always talk about them in theory, but we never act on them.
Yeah, that's interesting you say in a lab setting. I mean, that's kind of what the states are to some extent, right? So we do see a little bit of kind of experimentation at the state level, and you do see some things that work well at the state level and some things that don't work well. So I think we've seen that high rates of income taxes are pretty bad for an economy, especially corporate income taxes, that can have a really bad effect on, where businesses are going to locate, on the unemployment situation in a state. And so you do learn a lot from looking at the states. But you're right, in terms of federal reform, we've been talking about some of the same things for a very long time. And they don't seem to, nothing has fundamentally changed in a very long time. And so why that is, it's difficult to say, because I think there are some principles that we've kind of known for a long time. But I think we're just so, I guess, ingrained in our current system that it's hard to move away from that and really get a system that actually makes sense.
Or maybe, Preston, it has to do with something I read years and years ago, and I don't remember who said it, but it struck me. Somebody said, and I'm kind of paraphrasing here, this person mused that the greatest single social engineering document known to man is the U.S. tax code. So maybe we label it taxes, but it really is, to some point, who can have what and how much?
Yeah, that's an interesting point, too. I mean, back in the 90s, President Clinton at the time said that the era of big government was over. But what you actually saw was a lot of things moved out of just simply government spending to just simply, okay, we'll just make this a tax credit. And so that has been a big shift over the last 25 years or so, is that we're now just doing more through the tax code. You add a tax credit here, you make it refundable, no real difference between just sending someone a check, but we just call it a tax provision, and there's more political will for that sort of thing. So yeah, absolutely. I think that's a great point.
Does taxing the rich work? Here in Connecticut, we have kind of a centrist Democratic governor who is a rich guy, got into politics a few years ago, won in 2018. And then Lamont has to push back on people in his own caucus who are intent Preston, on, you know, mansion taxes, this and a capital gains and unrealized gains surtax on literally like on 15 or 17 people here in Connecticut because they're not paying enough. Does that sort of stuff ever work or not?
So there have been, I guess, experiments about wealth taxes. You can look at what the kind of European experiment. There are about 15 countries there for a while that had different forms of wealth taxes. There's really kind of three that remain, I think, maybe a couple more that you could classify as wealth taxes there. A lot of them end up abandoning it because it drives out a lot of those wealthy individuals. And people just move their assets into whatever's not captured by that tax. So, you know, the wealth taxes, they don't work particularly well. And I think one thing you realize as you study these things is we're kind of all in this boat together. So it's hard to really get a tax that's only going to hit one part of the economy or one group of people. It ends up having bleed over effects that hit us all.
Final question, Preston. If you're in a room now with the leaders of both parties in the House and Senate, what would you tell them?
Well, I would say that the tax system, I guess I go back to my first point. You know, we can talk about taxes, and taxes are a very, very important issue for a lot of Americans and for businesses. But ultimately, you know, the big fundamental issue that we have in this country is the spending. It's just if you look at the trajectory, it's just out of control, and it's going. There have to be fundamental changes, and they have to address those changes. They can't just bury their head in the sand and kick it down the road for the next Congress or the next administration to deal with. You know, you can look at these numbers, and you know, we're going to be at this rate. We're going to be paying 7% of the GDP. That's basically double what we're spending on national defense. We're going to be spending that just on interest payments on the national debt. And that's not a tax problem. That's a spending problem.
Preston Brasher, Senior Policy Analyst in the Grover M. Herman Center for the Federal Budget at the Heritage Foundation. Check them out online, heritage.org. Hey, Preston, thanks for joining us today. Really appreciate it. Take care, and we'll chat down the road. Thank you, sir.
Sounds good. Thanks, Paul.
Thanks. Appreciate it. All right. Preston Brasher, Brasher, just the way it sounds. Senior Policy Analyst in the Grover M. Herman Center for the Federal Budget. He focuses on tax policy. His research interests include corporate and international tax policy, simplifying and improving transparency in the tax code, tax and entitlement reform, and the distortionary effects of taxes. Man, there's been taxes since day one, right? It's in the Bible, folks. It's written about for thousands of years, right? You've got to take some money from people so the greater society can function. But the inevitable and continuing debate is you take how much from who, when, and why.